You are listening to Well Met, a Hearthstone podcast brought to you by BlizzPro.com.
Well Met.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode number 38 of Well Met. I'm John Horstman. I push the buttons every week, and with me is the man, Kevin Hovdestad. Hey Kev, how you doing?
I'm good, John, and it's gonna be quiet here this week, unfortunately, because our good friend Mr. J.R. Cook is unable to join us this evening, so people are gonna have to listen to the soft, soothing sounds of your voice.
Sorry about that in advance, but
me too.
At least they've got your voice. There was actually a review the other week who said you have the smoothest voice in podcasting. So kudos
to
you,
sir.
That's
very, very nice of someone to say that. I mean, I know the answer is probably it is not, but I certainly appreciate that.
For the person who said that, all I have to say is
remarkable. I can't do it.
So that's going to live with you forever, man. That's never going off the board.
It's never going away.
Cool. All right, so let's go ahead and Kev, tell us about your week this week.
Yeah, I didn't play a whole ton of Hearthstone, and the time I did spend playing my project right now, I've been kind of doing this, like, I do think I'm going to maybe make a push at Legend again, maybe not this month, maybe next month, but the holidays are a great time to be working on it. But I've been picking these projects, right? So I've done a couple of gold classes in recent memory. I did Druid and Hunter just after BlizzCon. And so my new project right now is maxing all the classes. And Rogue is the only class I don't have to max level. So hoping to get that done. I'm at about level 45, I think, right now with Rogue. And those last 10 hurt. They take a long time. But playing lots of tempo Rogue, having lots of fun with it. And that's right now, that's good enough. Like, it lets me play a few games every day, grind out a couple of quests, and I'm loving it.
Zoo Rogue is where it's at, man. You got to play that Zoo Rogue.
Nah. Digging my Temple Rogue. What about you?
I've been playing a lot, actually. So playing a couple of new decks, learning some Miracle Rogue, things like that. Having a lot of fun in the ladder. I think I put in almost 100 games this last week. So I actually put in a really good amount of Hearthstone and feeling really good. Played a little bit of Overwatch, played a little bit of World of Warcraft. Overall, it's been a really productive week, and yeah, just really solid so far. I hate the first week of the ladder because it's just so many freaking try-hard people like myself trying to get those early ranks up, and it's just a lot of garbage right now. So that hasn't been very fun, but besides that, it's been great. Loving Hearthstone. Been making a few new spreadsheets. So, yeah. Woo.
All right. So, I'm with you on 98% of the things you just said, especially the stuff about the first week. Because, frankly, most of the people that I know who play, I'm like, you know what? Let's just not play in the first week. You won't have a good time. But did you say Miracle Rogue? Did I hear that right?
Sorry, Oil Rogue.
Okay. Because I was like, am I missing something?
No, with you're right.
Like,
no.
John got in his hot tub time machine and took us back a year.
Oil Rogue. But, I mean, isn't Oil Rogue just the great, great grandchild of Miracle Rogue?
Yeah, I mean, Oil Rogue is Miracle Rogue that wins over two turns instead of one. But, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, so that was it. Pretty cool and straightforward. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us in the chat and all that stuff. If you guys want to catch the show live, you can catch us every Sunday night at 8 p.m. PST, and we do the show live over at twitch.tv/BlizzPro. 8 p.m.
7
p.m. PST.
7 p.m. Pacific.
I knew something was wrong. I've been scrambling the last half hour. I'm a little scatterbrained. I apologize in advance. Kevin's going to be correcting me a lot on just about everything I say, and just know it's not my fault. Deal?
That's just a regular week, dude.
This
This Week in Hearthstone, Heroes of Warcraft.
Let's talk some news before Kevin keeps, you know, stamping his foot down on any self-esteem I have left. All right, new season. We are live in December, the first ranked season that counts for 2016 World Championship points. Just a friendly reminder, if you hit Legend this season, you get a point towards World Championships. Doesn't mean as much as it did last year, but you do get a point. You can say, I got a point toward Hearthstone World Championships. So that's pretty cool. Kevin, what are your plans for this season, man? How are you going to be approaching this season?
Well, tough to say at this point. Like I said, I'm going to play a bunch of Rogue and try to get through that for myself, kind of as a like mental exercise, learn the class a little better. As far as the ladder, my gut is that there's going to be a lot more control on the ladder. So I want to put in the time, but I know the games are going to be longer and a lot slower. So I think I'm just going to try to make a point of playing a bunch over the holidays. Like, I think given that this is a month that's long and happens to have a couple weeks, everybody's going to be off work, have a little more free time. That's what I'm going to get my games in, is in the back half of the month.
Nice. Yeah, I'm thinking.
What about you?
For me, I'm just trying to play a lot. I'm tracking my games really hard. I'm taking a really organized approach. When I start to really kind of get into something, I do this where I totally hunker down and focus almost all of my spare time and effort into something. And that's what I'm doing right now with Hearthstone, which has been really, really great, really fun. I've met a lot of really cool people just sitting and, you know, playing Hearthstone together and laddering and, you know, talking through plays. And it's been great. I sat with Andres. He's a legend player over at Hearthaholics. Really smart guy. I think one of the smartest people we have right now as far as understanding the game and doing like a full-on podcast every week. He's super smart. And we had a lot of fun sitting in stream. Three nights ago, we sat for like 4 hours and we're running through some new variation of Hybrid Hunter and seeing what was on the ladder. And that was a lot of fun. So I'm going to be taking it though pretty strong. I'm hoping to hit Legend pretty early on, but I've also really haven't climbed up. I think I'm at rank 11 right now, so I'm not super high on the ladder by any means, but it's been really great learning games and that's okay. So we'll hit it hard the second season when it's not a bunch of Legend players on the ladder with me as well, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And I did want to mention something that I thought was interesting because maybe not a lot of people will know this, but the very first test season back during the beta actually opened this week 2 years ago.
Really?
Yeah. So on December 10th, we'll have had 2 years of ranked Hearthstone play. We have, this is the 21st season of regular play since they went into the original season back in April of 2014 when the game kind of went quasi live. But there were four test seasons that ran multiple months in some cases before that, because this first test season didn't end quite on like a neat month. It started mid-December, obviously the 10th. So yeah, 2 years of ranked Hearthstone play, including the four test seasons as of December 10th.
Wow. Hashtag KevFacts. Also this week we had a new Hearthstone patch. Nothing too huge on like the play and balance side, except that your client no longer crashes 1/10 of the time when you play the new Raptor. What's it called? Come on. What is it called?
Unearthed Raptor?
Unearthed Raptor. There it is. So that's good. But we also had four new card backs added to the game. So we're going to go ahead and talk about these because they're pretty cool. I think these are some of the most clean looking card backs that we've seen in quite a while. So coming in this December, we've got Winter Veil. And so we've got the Winter Veil card back coming up. And it's pretty cool. It's the, I think they call it the Winter Veil Wreath. And it's got a nice little wreath with a snow globe with a Hearthstone logo in the middle, a couple candy canes, little mistletoe for Kevin, his girlfriend, and yeah, so all that kind of stuff. What do you think about this card back, Kev?
Well, you and I kind of talked about this a little bit before the show, but honestly, I'm not super thrilled. And the only reason I say that, like, the art on this is probably one of my favorites. Like, it's one of the nicest looking, best animated card backs they've done yet. But they're already doing a new card back every month, plus card backs that you only get from exclusive promotions like the Blackrock Mountain pre-order. And now they're also going to add seasonal card backs where you have to make sure that you log in and fulfill whatever criteria during a very narrow window of time. Because usually, I mean, a seasonal event like their Winter Veil in World of Warcraft lasts like 2 weeks, I think. I don't even know. But that's a lot to manage. Like, and the card back collection has grown crazily, right? I'm pretty sure that like you and I are both probably sitting at over 24 card backs already. So it's getting to be a lot. It's getting to be a lot to manage. And the one thing you can really collect in Hearthstone other than the cards themselves is the card backs. And people take their card back completionism very seriously. I have all of the ones I am physically able to get. I've never been able to be at an event where I could have gotten the Tespa one, but I've got the rest of them. And it kind of, I don't know, it just seems like it doesn't feel like a nice benefit at this point because we don't know how you earn it. It like from what we know right now, which is literally nothing, it feels like it's going to be a punishment where I have to make sure I log in and do XYZ thing in the game to get some card back. That's where I'm sitting right now.
Kevin, I'm going to have to disrespectfully disagree with you here for a second.
Rude, sir.
I'm just kidding. It'll be respectful. For me, So I am missing, outside of Tespa and then the Golden China
Gold
card
Celebration.
Back. Yeah, the Golden Celebration card back. I'm missing two ranked play card backs from times when I could not play. I am not in the slightest bit butthurt because I couldn't play or didn't play for 2 months. And so somebody gets something that I don't. I would rather the Blizzard team make new stuff for people to play and entice people to play and keep coming out with that stuff rather than not doing it. Like, what is it better than, oh, well, we don't want people to be offended or sad if they can't get this and they don't play over Hearthstone or over this month. So let's just not do it. I don't know. I don't think that makes a lot of sense. I think you got to have these special events, get people to want to play your game. There are going to definitely be people who don't or didn't even know about Hearthstone until next year. And they're going to have that realization of there are 24 months worth of card backs that I did not get or whatever. But I don't know. I also think that eventually down the road, there will be some way to acquire at least ranked season card backs that you've missed in the past. What do you think?
I could see that. And I mean, odds are this is going to be something that comes back every year, right? Like, they made it sound for a long time like the Fireside Gathering card back was going to be super limited, but they've never changed that program because they just, if you log in and play a couple games on a local network, you get the card back. Done.
Yep.
It could be that this will be play during the Christmas season. And it does sound from the patch notes like there's going to be some cool in-game stuff, maybe some new effects on some of the game boards or effects when cards are played. And I dig that. Like, I think that's a cool touch. So, like, I'm not all doom and gloom. For me, it's one of those things where my time to play games is limited. And as somebody who like works in the industry, I feel like I have a lot of it, but there's still a finite amount of it. So at some point, it's nice to feel like I can choose to log in and play the game. Not like I have to play this many games of Heroes to earn this thing. I have to play this many games of Hearthstone to earn this thing. Because people care, right? They care about having this stuff. And I think that's, at some point for me, that's just going to become overwhelming. Like, it's clearly not everybody's going to feel that way. I'm speaking 100% for myself, but yeah, my hope is, and I guess the one other thing I would add is I would love to see some non-card back stuff in this game. Like, I would love to see them find a new way to reward people, whether that's some other way of tracking like achievements or badges, or I don't know, but like card backs are kind of overdone.
Do you really think that this is going to be card back gated by the number of games you play? I really don't think that's it. I guarantee
I have
you
no
it's
idea.
Like, log in during these 2 weeks and play a game and you get this, you know, card back, basically like during Winter Veil and World of Warcraft or something like that.
Maybe. I mean, I assume they'll make you do something to earn it because I'm sure that the point is that it's designed to be a way to boost user engagement, right? Like, it's some kind of metric that they want to fulfill. They want to up their player engagement over the holidays and keep people logging in. So this is how they're going to do it. And I don't have a problem with that, but I assume it's probably going to be like a, you have to play 5 games or something, not just a, you log in and you get it. Because otherwise, what would be the point? Like, they could just put it on everybody's account for free and call it a day.
Yeah, like, I think it's going to be really low barrier to entry, though. I don't think it's something that you're going to have to really, quote unquote, grind out to be able to get. It just, they really haven't done that in the past for different cards, except for like other games, you know, and stuff like that. So I don't really think we're going to see that. But let's go ahead and talk about these other three. We're going to just kind of talk about in blanket. We've got the Thrall Shaman card. We've got the Love is in the Air card. And then we've got the Thunderbluff something card. Torrin Thunderbluff. So, these are really cool cards. I definitely think the animations on the Love is in the Air one is pretty neat. The other one are cool, nice and basic. Nothing really stands out to me about the other two, but I'm also Alliance, so maybe I'm just not as into it. What do you think, Kev?
I mean, I dig them. They're nice. It is interesting, in a way, I guess, right after we have this discussion about adding the Winter Veil card, which I'm actually hearing might be related to the new Tavern Brawl that's coming out, the Winter Veil Tavern Brawl. But yeah, interesting then to turn around and have them put out the Love is in the Air, which is their like February Valentine's Day holiday, as the January card back instead. So again, I mean, maybe it's not something they're actually planning on doing a lot of. It's maybe just a one-time thing, but the artwork is cool. And it's going to make for a lot of card backs, hey? Like, I want to say, I'm pretty sure that those plus the current batch of alternate character backs puts anybody who's been playing since the beginning at over 30.
Yeah, it's got to be pretty close. Yeah, when you think of all the different card backs you can get, it has to be 2 months worth of play on top of that. I think that sounds about right. It's got to be right there. So, yeah. So, we've got those card backs in the game now. You can go check them out on all your favorite rumor websites, and it's also on battle.net. And, yeah, they look great, and they'll be coming into your collection soon when you hit rank 20 or do this mysterious Winter Veil event. So, yeah. That about wraps up the news this week. Pretty slow overall that we had to talk 15 minutes about card backs, but we did it. And now we're going to go ahead and talk about the meta this week.
Beat 'em or join 'em.
Ah, oh, no.
This week in the meta, also fairly slow. It's just been kind of a weird week. I think everyone's coming off of Thanksgiving a little bit. There's just a lot of stuff going on. And so, yeah, but Tempo Storm, literally a couple hours before we got here to record, posted their meta snapshot number 40. And some surprises here. We're seeing Aggro Shaman come up to number 1 in tier 1, climbing all the way from rank 6. So jumping 6 spots and dethroning mid-range paladin and secret paladin up in number 1 and 2, and then mid-range druid is still hanging on at number 4, but aggro druid dropped a bit as well. So yeah, pretty interesting rankings. Are you on board with this aggro shaman number 1 meta here, Kevin?
It's tough, man. It's hard to say. Like, it's a super good deck. I didn't actually have a lot of fun playing it when I messed around with it, because I messed around with both, right? I tried Reynaud's version, I tried Luffy's version, and I just didn't find I enjoyed the games. Like, some of them were total just, you win in 4 turns and it's hilarious. Like, that's can be a lot of fun. Sometimes you sit and you struggle because you take too much overload too early and you can't close out games and you don't have the right tools in the right order. Like, it's not a deck that has a super consistent play style. But I mean, honestly, I look at this list and I think something is wrong here, because in the top 10 decks, right, you're seeing like 4-ish strong mid-range decks: Paladin, Druid, Patron Warrior, Demon Zoo. You're seeing Aggro Shaman and Aggro Druid, two very, very fast decks with specific, unique kind of metas. And then you're also seeing a smattering of control decks. You're seeing Freeze Mage, Reno Lock, Mali Lock. Like, I don't understand how all of those decks can be competitive at the same time. Like, just to my understanding of the meta, something there is wrong. And I honestly think is that these lists right now are just not being updated really, really actively. Like, they've got a list and they discuss a couple of points of movement, but like, I don't think that this list has been honestly redone from scratch in a long time. Because I don't think that there's any realistic way that you can say that, for example, Oil Rogue is still the bottom of tier two. Like, it's either getting better because it counters a bunch of stuff that we're currently seeing on the ladder, or it's getting worse. Like, the meta is not as static as this report makes me... Like, I don't think it's as static as this report is being written to suggest it is.
I mean, I think if you look like around, so tier one changes quite a bit. I mean, at least there's a lot of jockeying for stuff and stays either consistent or you see those changes. When you look at the graph for tier two, actually, there's a lot of kind of jockeying for different spots in this one where you've seen, you know, you can definitely see a trend where Mage, you know, has kind of rose up and then has come back down a little bit. In recent weeks, and you know, we've kind of seen the same with Warrior, where it was up so high and now it's kind of gone down. I just don't know if they talk about tier three or tier four at all, because is just that seems to be the tiers where I think there's just so much like meh, whatever. Like, I can get on board with, you know, like Oil Rogue. When you look over the last, I think this is over the last 13 weeks. You've seen it go all the way from 17 down to 24, all the way up to rank 8, and then settling back at 13, which, I mean, I think is pretty accurate. We saw it really huge a few weeks ago come back, and yeah, I don't know. I think there's definitely a lot of neglect in tier 3 and tier 4. I still hate that you put all those Hunter decks in tier three. There's no way, in my opinion, that Hunter is tier three, especially Hybrid Hunter. With these decks that you are saying are the top five, Hybrid Hunter is really good against those decks. And so, I don't know, but I'm right with you on that. It's definitely a little bit weird.
Yeah, it honestly feels to me like they've decided these decks are the strongest, and they're not as worried right now. Like, we used to say, and we've said every week, Temple Storm does the ladder meta. They talk about what you're going to see on the ladder. Well, what I'm seeing on the ladder does not reflect these lists at all. Like, I haven't seen mid-range Druid or old-fashioned mid-range Paladin in an age. I see tons and tons of, like, Tempo Mages all over the place right
now.
Stupid
freaking Tempo Mage. Do not say that deck on the podcast.
It's all over the place,
oh,
man. You
I
see
hate
a ton
it
of that.
So much.
I see tons of Zoo. I see, I would say, like a reasonable amount of Face Hunter still. But like, I don't see Aggro Shaman in anywhere near the rate that this list should suggest. Secret Paladin is still really powerful, but it feels like it's a very figured out deck now. And it really thrived on no one knowing how to counter it. There's a lot of good counters to it out there now. And again, like, sake of argument, I don't think Dragon Priest is a tier two deck anymore. I really don't.
Yeah, it's tough. I think Dragon Priest does all right, especially during, you can kind of see if we look at, I'm going to pull up Dragon Priest here really quick. When you look at Dragon Priest, how do they not have the rankings for the past? Yeah, they do. There it is. Dragon Priest always does a little bit better, like the first week out of the month. When you go back about 4 weeks, you see a little spike up in rankings because people are running just such fast decks. And when you've got such powerful ways to draw off of Leper Gnomes and Web Spinners and stuff like that, and then you can lay down your taunts and things like that, I mean, it ends up being a pretty solid deck against that ladder meta. But to your point, it's not an incredibly fast meta right now, and I don't think that I would put Dragon Priest up in tier two either, unless you're seeing a lot of aggro. Now, if we're going to see as much aggro Shaman as the list is saying, then maybe that makes it barely hang on to the bottom of tier two, but it's definitely not that great of a deck. And we even got an email from a listener who was saying, like, I don't know how to beat Dragon Priest. I don't know how to do it. It's too difficult. In fact, they went as far to say, like, this deck is broken. And the reply we gave him was just like, if you're running into a lot of Dragon Priests, don't run, like, I think he was running like a Face Hunter or something like that. And like, part of it's like, if you're running Face Hunter and you're trying to play Dragon Priest and they have any sort of decent mulligan, you're going to have a bad time.
Yeah, it's tough, man. It's tough. And none of these aggro decks, this is the thing, is that any well-built control deck that doesn't get totally destroyed on its mulligan, and even most decent tempo decks, if they've been teched for aggro, just beat them. Like, they beat them hard. You find a tempo mage that rolls into like an early mirror image, that's the end of any aggro deck. You find any sort of control warrior that gets their early armor smiths and fiery win axe, nope, you're not beating that as an aggro deck. Like, it's tough. So I don't know. I mean, I think there's got to be a swing one direction or the other. Either we're going to see a lot more aggro or a lot more control, and it's going to happen right away here.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are you going to run this week then, Kev?
I mean, after I get done messing around with Rogue, if I'm going to go back on the ladder, it's probably going to have to be, like, it's got to be a control deck right now. There's just too much aggro out there, and I don't want to coin flip against other aggro decks. So I might go back to my old school kind of custom control warrior list, or I would actually love to see, and I maybe we'll spend some time on this at some point, like at a control mage really make a splash, because there's definitely enough stuff going on right now with like tempo rogue, secret paladin, all the people who are relying on sticky board, where I think having a couple of silences and a couple of polymorphs could actually be really, really good. And a little bit more reliable than the shaman toolkit, because shaman, yeah, you get hex, you get earth shock, which are both probably even better, but you don't get enough other good, like you can't build your own board or do as much damage. Like, you just have no burn, you have no reach. So I think mage is where it's going to be at.
Yeah, I think that's a really good pick. I think if right now I'm actually not seeing that much aggro, I'm really not. So I actually switched over to mid-range druid, and it's a little bit faster mid-range. It's really close to that deck that you ran to legend, where it's not traditional mid-range where you've got, you know, 8 and 9 drops. Instead, you kind of just cut it off at 7. But it's also not running like leper gnomes on the front and stuff either. Runs your traditional ramp toolkit, things like that. And I might stick with that as long as I keep seeing these kind of more mid fastish mid decks. And then if I see it slow down, I'll probably switch back over to Hybrid Hunter again. Because nice. that's been really solid so far. I think I'm at about like a 65-70% win rate, which feels good. So probably just keep running that.
You know, now that you say that, I want to say that this is about the same kind of meta that really allowed Trap Hunter to take off back in the day. Remember that list, the Roman P Trap Hunter that had like Misdirect and all the traps in it, really thrived off of getting more charges on Eaglehorn Bow? Like, I want to say this is a very similar meta to that.
Yeah, it could be. And Dart Trap might be a pretty decent addition to that.
Yeah, it's a lot of damage.
Yeah, especially if you're able to keep the board relatively clear and use that to kind of take out some big threats, you know?
Yeah, yeah, I mean, 5, you could be removing a 5 or 6 drop or just pushing a ton of face damage, so.
Maybe after this show, we should run some Trap Hunter and see what's going on.
We should totally run some Trap Hunter.
Maybe we'll do that. That'd be fun. If we do, I'll post the VODs and we can show you and talk about it. But yeah, cool. Kev, should we talk about some League of Explorers this week?
We should definitely talk about some League of Explorers this week.
Well, I can't believe that worked.
All right, we've got it. Our final week, our final wing of League of Explorers. This is our final card review. We love and hate this. Card reviews are fun at the same time. By week 4, holy crap, is there a lot of cards to be reviewed, and everyone's doing it. So it's a good thing and it's a bad thing.
I don't want to listen to it. I mean, If I don't want to listen to it, surely to God, people listen to the show don't want to listen to it. So
we tried to pick the good ones this week, and obviously we didn't do a card review last week, so hopefully that was a nice break in the monotony of card reviews. But let's go ahead and talk a little bit about some new cards here, because we do have some new ones and some really interesting ones. I don't know how good they're going to be, but they're definitely really interesting. The first one we're going to talk about is Cursed Blade. It is a 1 mana, 2 attack, 3 durability weapon. That's rogue, right? Rogue? I can't see from that.
Cursed Blade, I thought.
We are a couple of casuals right now.
I thought it was warrior. I'm sure it was warrior. It's warrior. It's a warrior card.
It doesn't look like it from the thing for some reason. I don't know why I'm such a casual when it comes to this. I always get like the colors of the weapons so mixed up, like a casual. So Cursed Blade, 1 mana, 2 attack, 3 durability. Says double all damage dealt to your hero. All right, Kev. This is interesting. We haven't really seen something like this in a weapon before. I think this would be the first time we've actually seen something like this. The only other thing that's kind of close is Gladiator's Longbow, which is the exact opposite. Take no damage when you use the weapon. What do you think about this one?
It's interesting. It's definitely going to be a very good way for Warrior to sort of contest early board. You can slap on the Cursed Blade, trade it into a 1 or 2 drop, and then I think the trick is going to be, unfortunately, this is going to be something that you can't afford to leave on your hero for 3 turns with 3 charges of durability. You've got to have a way to get it off. So I think you're going to see it run probably as a 1 of. People are going to mulligan for it really aggressively, but they're going to immediately try to overwrite it, and it's going to mean that, like, weapon-driven warrior, even like an aggro warrior, could make a comeback, right? People might use it in kind of that old school style that still sees like a Rothy Weaponsmith played, would be a great one drop into a turn 2 Bloodsail Raider. Like, there's lots of stuff that could be really good here, but you can't leave it on your character. And I think the problem is that if you put it on turn 1 and you're trying to race with it, you're putting yourself in a pretty scary position, because there's so many things that can do so much damage. Like, can you imagine having that on when somebody gets off like a Knife Juggler into Unleash the Hounds or Knife Juggler into Muster for Battle? Like, you could be taking 10 damage on like turn 3.
Yeah, I really don't see this card doing well unless there's kind of 2 different cards that could be decent, and it's kind of like in a taunt heavy warrior where they're not going to really touch your hero, and JR will finally see Bolster come back in and be super super relevant, and then you can see something like that. Obviously in a very aggro heavy meta, you're not wanting to see this, because really if you're an aggro player and you're basically getting, because basically it's the same as getting 2 attacks off every time, if you try to clear it with that weapon, it's you can't win that way. So in an aggro heavy meta, it really can't work. I don't see this working. I really don't. I don't even think you're going to run it as a 1 of, especially with Fiery War Axe, so much better. I don't know. I don't see it. I cannot see the value of this card. What do you think?
Maybe. I mean, I would like to see it played. I mean, it's definitely a possibility, because it does allow you to establish really good early board control and play an aggro style as warrior, which they haven't been able to do for a very long time. But you have to make some very calculated decisions here. Like, if you use that thing to clear a Leper Gnome, you take 6 damage on your first turn. Like, that's pretty insane, right? You have to think very carefully. 8 damage on
8,
your first
yeah,
turn.
Yeah, I was going
to
say 8.
You got to think really carefully about what you're, like, I think you would just use it as a way to do, like, if you think about it as being 6 damage for 1 mana, it's a fireball for 1 mana in terms of what it's capable of doing. So you'd have to just play around having ways to make sure that you kept your face from taking extra damage while you did that. That's a super, like, and you're basically, it's like a warlock card almost, right? You're trading probably like 2 to 4 points of your own health to do that extra damage. That's maybe it's worth it. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's probably a pretty good spread. Probably around 3 to 4 damage is what you'll average taking in doing that. I don't know. I don't like it. Let's talk about this next one, though. I like this card. The Curse of Rafam. 2-mana warlock spell reads, give your opponent a cursed exclamation point card. While they hold it, they take 2 damage on their turn. I like this card. I think it's really interesting mechanic. Number one, you're basically, especially if you can get that early in the game, you're forcing your opponent to either pass a turn, play a weaker turn, or take 2 damage to play their full turn on tempo. And I think that's a brilliant thing for Hearthstone. I think that's something that we really need as a way to like slow down it. It brings a new mechanic to be able to slow down your opponent's turn. And I think that's really fun. And I think we're going to see this see play, especially in a lot of these. Honestly, almost any Warlock deck, I think, could stand to use this one. What do you think, Kev?
I mean, I think it's going to be interesting, although it may as well say 7 mana, play this in Lotheb, because I think that's really what you'd be trying to do with it. It does open up some interesting possibilities where that's going to be an awesome counter to things like Freeze Mage. Where you just force them to take that damage on their own turn. And I'm curious, because I don't actually know the answer. Is this affected by spell damage?
It is not.
It is not. So 2 damage, then, I mean, could be 4 damage if you get to play it twice. Hard to say. Hard to say. I wonder if you could make like a mill style warlock work with it by flooding their hand with stuff like that and Mukla. I don't know. So there's got to be something there. It's got to be playable. I just don't know where it's going to fit.
Yeah, I mean, it's even great for like, I mean, even think of like Handlock being able to, on the coin, put that out on like, well, not you wouldn't coin it out turn 2, but on turn 2 as your kind of burn card while you're tapping, and they either have to throw away a turn or lose some of that aggression. Whereas if you're not, you know, 10 damage deep by the time that they, you know, drop that first giant, you're kind of in trouble. There's a lot of scary stuff you're gonna have to put up with if you can't put that pressure on. So I think it's really interesting. I really like it. More than anything, though, I like the mechanic of it. I think it's a really smart move by the Hearthstone design team to test a card like this and see what it means for the game, and hopefully open up more cards like kind of like this in the future. Because this is the first time really where, outside of the number of cards you have, this is like one of the first times that we're actually seeing the cards that your opponent is holding is affecting their health and their board and what you're doing. So I think it's really neat.
Yeah, it's very cool that it's an effect from the hand. This is a lot like the Cro-Magus fight in Blackrock Mountain where you had to deal with this mechanic? And I think that's cool that they're letting that come into ranked plays. So I would love to see more stuff like this in the long term. And it's definitely interesting because it's also got drawbacks, right? You never want to feed this card into the hand of somebody who has the ability to do something based off of spells. It would have been awful to play against like a Miracle Rogue. It'll be awful to play against a Tempo Mage. Like, there's lots of places where you don't want to give up this card. So I like that it offers counterplay, but it also has very obvious drawbacks.
Yeah. Let's go to this next one here. The Museum Curator, it's a 2-mana, 1-attack, 2-health priest minion that reads, Battlecry, discover a death rattle card. This is interesting. What do you think, Kev?
I mean, this is tough because I think, like, you have to remember, because we've had this conversation about the discover mechanic already. Discover has a built-in favor for class cards. So you're going to see primarily class cards. Of the 50 or so Death Rattle minions in the game, what you're basically saying is, I want to get a Dark Cultist. And that's what you're playing it for, is the ability to play Curator on 2 into Cultist on 3. I think that's the only reason you would bother. And there's so many bad Death Rattle minions I mean, nothing that doesn't synergize, I guess, with Priest, because you can't get any of the other class Death Rattle cards. So you could get like a Death Lord. You could get like a Sludge Belcher. But I just don't know that I would want to play it. Like, it's such a tempo loss to throw down in the hopes of playing something like, I mean, fundamentally, it's designed to pull Dark Cultist. And Dark Cultist is great on turn three. But if I want Dark Cultist, I'll put Dark Cultist in my deck. Like, I don't know why.
Well,
I would
you probably
play
will
this
have
card.
Dark Cultist too, but three Dark Cultists aren't bad.
I don't know. I mean, I don't see it being good. And also, it also doesn't have a mana cost restriction. So, I mean, yeah, I could very well be pulling Dark Cultist, which would be great and a really good on curve play. But I could also be pulling something that's totally useless to me. I could be pulling like an Abomination or a huge Toad or a Lepronome. Like, if I pull Lepronome out of this card, what am I going to do with that? You'd have to have a very specific Death Rattle themed strategy in mind. Like, I think you'd have to have a plan that involved maximizing Death Rattle effects somehow.
Death Rattle Priest is back. Bring back the Undertaker and let's run Death Rattle Priest again. Who would have thought? Let's talk about this last card here. Or unless you got any other thoughts?
No, not at all.
All right, cool. Desert Camel, 3 mana, 2 attack, 4 health. Hunter Beast reads, Battlecry, put a 1-cost minion from each deck into the battlefield. I think I like this card just because of outside of Priest. I'm trying to think of any others. Hunter, obviously. I'm trying to think, I guess Zoo, like there are very few decks that are actually running 1 mana minions to begin with. Shaman, sometimes if they're running aggro, like right now, maybe I wouldn't, but I don't know. That basically this is saying is, you know, throw down your web spinner too. So I don't know. Kind of interesting. That basically makes it a 3/5 and draw 2 cards. One web spinner and a beast, and then whatever they get. So I don't know. Seems okay. It seems like there's definitely ways to make it work. What do you think?
Yeah, I would like to say there's definitely going to be value there. I mean, for one, it's good in terms of where it fits on curve, because it's going to trade really nicely into a lot of lower cost. Like if you play this on 3 to contest like a Knife Juggler, it lives and it also puts another body on the board. Unfortunately, yeah, Hunter basically only runs Web Spinner as a 1-drop traditionally. So you'd have to make sure that you plan on a 1-drop. And I think you would feel bad in some ways if you got your 1-drop before you got to play Desert Camel and didn't get the value off, right? Like you would almost dislike seeing them in the wrong order. I don't know. I mean, maybe there's a plan here that revolves around some kind of really epic play using like Tundra Rhinos or something, or it's a way to set up. Maybe it's just a way to set up a big turn with like a fast but not face Hunter, right? You throw this down, you throw like Brave Archer into your deck. So you flood the board, you get the Inspire effect, you push a ton of damage. I don't know. I like the card. I like the card fundamentally. And like, a 2/4 camel on 3 that pulls an extra body into like a Houndmaster on 4. That's a scary good turn.
Yeah.
Like that
and it's
could
a beast
be really,
too,
really
so,
good.
You know, yeah. Like it's not awful. The question is how prevalent are 1-drops going to be in other people's decks? And is it really worth it if Hunter is only able to run really Web Spinner, right? And so,
I mean, I think what you're going to see is you're going to see people try to make Injured Cavaldir work with it. I think that's what it's going to be for.
Interesting. Because
if you could play turn 3, get a 2/4 beast out and a 2/4 vanilla minion, that's 12 points of stats on the board for 3 mana. That's scary. That's Dr. 3 levels of scary.
Yeah, I like it. I think it's cool. Let's go on to this next one here. Ooh, yep, here we go. All right. Entomb is a 6-mana priest. Spell reads, choose an enemy minion, shuffle it into your deck. So basically the first big hard removal spell that we've seen for Priest, and obviously besides Mind Control, bypasses Death Rattle, which is great. Yeah, this is a great card for Priest. What do you think, Kev?
I dig the heck out of this card. I mean, Priest is already one of the most fun things to play on the ladder, and there's so many ways that you can manipulate board state to your own advantage. This is going to make some incredible stuff possible. I mean, whatever you're normally dealing with in terms of removal, like this is not killing a minion. It's just picking it up and taking it away. So it counters death rattles super hard. You can trigger all the paladin's secrets and then pick up that 10-9 mysterious challenger. Like, there's lots of stuff you can do that's just super good. It's in a great place on curve. I don't know how you're ever going to contest board against a priest, because priest is going to have, like, in a good priest deck right now, I think you would see like a pain, a death, maybe a shadow madness. They're already running like a light bomb, but now, like, you're not going to play light bomb to counter Dr. Boom. You're going to play Entomb. You know, pick Dr. Boom up, slap it in your own deck. That's crazy. That's an incredibly powerful card. I don't know how anyone can't be super excited about this card. Like, it's so good. It's scary.
Do you think it's too slow?
No, not at all. I mean, I think if it was any faster, it would be too powerful, honestly. Mm-hmm. And like, think about the priest removal kit as it scales, right? In the early game, you've got a bunch of slow cards to sort of build a bit of a board and some draw. You start to see your removal package at like 2 and 3 with Pain and Death, Shadow Madness on 4, Holy Noah on 5, Light Bomb on 6. There's already a ton of stuff going on. I think between Entomb and like, you know, Double Cabal Shadow Priest, a Shadow Madness and a single Mind Control, you basically get to dictate what your opponent does or doesn't get to actually use on their board. And that's insane. Like, I can't even imagine how you're supposed to beat Priest without some kind of combo at this point. Like, I think Druid is going to be one of the only classes that can consistently end Priest, because you're going to need a ton of burst damage. You're just going to need a ton of damage to get through Priest, because they can never establish a board against a Priest. This is going to be crazy. I'm super excited for this card.
Cool. Me too. I also am cautiously excited about this next card. Animated Armor. It's a 4-mana, 4/4 rare mage minion that reads, your hero can only take 1 damage at a time. I think this is kind of cool, kind of interesting. It, again, something new, kind of Bolf Ram Shield-ish in the sense that it is inhibiting how you take damage. What do you think, Kev?
When we saw the card previews, this was one of the card effects that I was the most excited about. I really enjoy the notion of this card. In reality, I have no idea how you're going to make this card work. I mean, mage is not traditionally a class that runs a ton of taunts. 4 health is not actually very sticky. Like, it's removed by Death Spite and Swipe and True Silver Champion and all sorts of like very common core cards. So I don't, like, how do you get value out of it? When do you play it to get value out of it? What are you using it for? And how do you, like, what are you doing? You're basically buying yourself, because no one's going to ignore it. Like, no one's going to just hit your face for 1 multiple times. They're going to clear your minion. So on 4, would you not just be better off playing like Ascension Shieldmaster? I don't understand. I don't know why you would play it when you don't have any way. Like, maybe as a mage, you play this in like a modified slower mech deck and you pray to get a finicky cloak field or something. Like, I just don't know. I don't know how you keep it alive and make it relevant.
I mean, there's a couple of different ways. It's really designed to slow down damage to your hero. It's really basically it's a anti-aggro tech card, right? When you're seeing a lot of aggro, you now are making them trade or do less damage to you. I don't, you know, to your point, this is not like a tempo play. You play in a mid-range or control meta, because you're right, it just gets removed. But at the same time, like right now, playing that against Aggro Shaman, he's got a trade that slows him down a whole turn. That gives you, you know, imagine like a tempo mage being able to put this down is really going to, you know, help that happen, I guess, is what I would say. So I don't know. I think this can definitely work. I think people are writing it off for the reason that you say, and I think we're actually going to see some cool decks come out of Animated Armor. I don't know. Call me.
I would love to see
optimistic.
It work. Yeah, I would love to see it work. My gut is that if you're trying to prevent burn, if you're trying to survive against like an aggro shaman, you'd be just as well off to throw out like a counter spell and prevent the spell from going off, like eat the crackle. You know, there's too many other things that I feel like could do the job that this card is intended to do. If its stat line were different, like if this were a on four mana, what would you expect? You would expect to see like a 1/7 or something, or a 1/8 if it was like a low attack minion. Then maybe, because then it would actually eat a bunch of trades or a bunch of burn, and that would be cool. But as it stands, I don't see it. And it's not like mage is a class that can protect it or buff it. Like, I don't know. Cautiously pessimistic.
Come on, man. You got your... there's a lot of cool synergies. I'm going to show you wrong. Just like Finley Murgleton. I'm putting in the Murgleton pile. Let's talk about some of these legendaries we've got coming out in the next. Is this all in Wing 4, by the way? It's Elise Star Seeker. I don't think it is, but we didn't chat about Elise Star Seeker.
Entomb came out last week, didn't it?
Yeah, Entomb did. And then I think Elise Star Seeker. Well, yeah, Elise Star Seeker does come out this week as well.
Yeah.
And so does the other one. So Elise Star Seeker is a 4-mana. 3/5 legendary, neutral legendary reads, battle cry, shuffle the map to the golden monkey into your deck. The map to the golden monkey is a 2-mana spell. It reads, shuffle the golden monkey into your deck and draw a card. And then the golden monkey is a 4-mana 6/6 taunt that reads, battle cry, replace your hand and deck with all legendary minions. Really fun card for sure. Kevin, you're shaking your head. Yes.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, okay. The reality of this card for me is 3/5 on 4 is a great stat line for one, right? Like that's refreshment vendor or Senjin Shield Master. Like that's a super good stat line as a card. So inherently Elise is playable. Like she's good on 4. Map to the Gold Monkey, a 2-mana spell. Easy to get a quick cycle. Like you play lots of cards that are 2-mana to cycle. Sometimes you cycle with Battle Rage. Sometimes you cycle with Flare. Like you're never really super mad to pay 2-mana to draw a card. It's not great. Hopefully that spell triggers something else for you, but 2-mana to draw a card is fine. 6/6 with taunt for 4 is crazy talk. That's incredible. That's a phenomenal value when you play it. And as soon as you play it, this is I think where this deck is going to, or this card is going to shine. Think about the synergy here with Reno Jackson. You can run a totally core standard control deck that uses duplicate cards, sets up whatever normal plays you would have wanted. When you pull the Golden Monkey, when you're ready and you've got Reno in hand, you slap down the Golden Monkey, and now you're guaranteed every card in your deck is unique because they're all legendary, right? Like you can't be a bunch of duplicate legendaries. And then you'd be able to play Reno, guaranteed.
Do we know for sure that they're all unique legendaries?
I mean, I assume they have to be. I would be really surprised if they weren't.
I don't know, man. I actually disagree. I bet you get duplicates.
Okay, but I mean, even if that's the case, it's an eminently playable card. Like, there's nothing in any of the stat lines here. Storm.
They're just all going to be Millhouse Mana Storms.
I don't know. I like this card. I like the card. I like the concept. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I think it's even like a viable way for you to deal with, you know, slower control decks that don't have a really great win condition.
Yeah, I don't know. I think this card is too slow. I'm going to go ahead and say
really?
It. Yep. I think it's too slow. I think you got to get through too many cards, and then by the time you get through all those cards, how many cards do you have left? Is it even worth it that they're all legendary now? And is all legendary a good thing? Not all legendaries are great. You know, imagine getting Acid Maw or Millhouse Mana Storm, or there are a lot of legendaries that just aren't that great. This reminds me of Mistcaller, where it's super enticing. It just sounds so great on paper and then disappoints just because it's too slow. We are seeing things slow down, but you are relying on drawing 3 specific cards and then being alive long enough to be able to see it played. I am all for cool cards. I am all for fun. These are awesome, fun cards. People are going to have a blast with them. You're going to see so many YouTube videos, and you're going to see so many Reddit posts about this card. I don't think it's a competitive card. I really don't.
Interesting. I mean, honestly, I think it's definitely got potential as the kind of card where you could have it as a one of in a deck just as an emergency for fatigue situations, because you play that 3/5 for four, totally adequate play. It puts a card back in your deck. You play that card, you're forced to take the fatigue damage, but then you get the golden monkey. And the 6/6 for four is super good. And I don't know. I mean, most decks right now are running minion based win conditions. So I feel like there would be value in potentially getting, I don't know. I mean, it's going to be a fun card. At least Starseeker is adequate. I don't know. I don't think it's going to be game breaking good. I don't think it's going to be unplayable. Maybe that's where I stand.
Yeah, I think at the very most likely, I see this card being competitive as Elise as a 4-mana tempo play. Like, I don't know. The rest of it is just kind of like, hey, maybe this will work out and great, bonus. But even then, I don't know if I want a deck full of legendaries. I don't know if I want my removal spells and my burn spells and all this stuff being changed to old murky and things like that. I don't think I want that. So I don't know. It definitely ramps up the RNG a little too high to be, again, overall competitive. And then if I wanted an all legendary deck, I'd make an all legendary deck. People have tried to do that and they don't win games with it. There's a reason why.
No, they don't.
There's a reason why having all legendaries doesn't mean you have a winning deck. So, but I'm right with you. I'm optimistic that this is going to be a very fun card. People are going to love it. People are going to send us emails saying you guys should be more happy about this card. And I'm going to tell them I'm really happy about this card. You will just not see it in the decks that I play. But yeah, I don't know.
Cool. Great card will not feature on John's stream. Yep. Next.
Let's talk about Arch. Would you say English major, Kevin? Is it Archmage or Archmage?
Well, for one, I didn't take an English major. For two, it's definitely Arch.
Okay. Arch Thief Rafam. It's a 9-mana, 7 attack, 8 health, legendary. Minion reads battle cry, discover a powerful artifact. There are 3 artifacts here. They're all 10 mana. One is the Lantern of Power that reads give a minion plus 10 plus 10. There's another one that reads it's a Mirror of Doom. Fill your board with 3/3 mummy zombies. And then the last one is a Timepiece of Horror. Deal 10 damage randomly split among all enemies. Kev, what do you think about this card?
I'm okay. So the spells are cool, and there's clearly a scale of power here. Lantern of Power is better than Mirror of Doom, is better than Timepiece of Horror. So I guess I just don't know what you would play it in. This feels like Secret Paladin that hits super late in a weird way, right? Like you throw down Arch Thief Rafam. And I don't know. I guess like he's gonna die to some kind of removal, whether it's a BGH or what have you. 8 health is a nice spot because it survives a lot of things. But you're basically just hoping to have something stick to the board after you've played him that you can use that Lantern of Power on to close the game out. Like that Lantern of Power is just Savage Roar with a single minion. Like,
Do you really think that Lantern of Power is the best of those spells?
Massively, yes, absolutely.
What?
Yeah, no, for sure it is. For sure it is. Like, that's not a question. That is a statement of fact.
You can't even say that. Absolutely.
Yes,
not.
I can. Yes,
no,
I can.
Not
as a
even
statement
close.
Of fact.
We're not even going to have this conversation because I know we'll never get anywhere.
Anyway, I don't think he's going to be a super playable card. We've never seen a 9-mana card that's really good. I mean, on 9 at this point, would you rather play this guy and hope to get one of these spells that is your entire turn, right? as opposed to playing like an Alexstrasza, a Nefarian, like any of the other 9-mana cards. And on 10, by the time you're thinking about playing Lantern of Power, wouldn't you rather have a Pyroblast or a Deathwing? Like, I don't know what the plan is here. I guess maybe it could work as a late game win con in like a control warrior type deck, but we've said that about lots of other cards before and it's never actually panned out. Like, there's not really room in a lot of deck archetypes for a card like this.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think all the spells suck. Like, I don't want or need 10-10. I mean, 10-10's great, but I don't want to waste my turn on 10-10. Filling your board with 3/3 mummy zombies. I mean, if that's 6 of them, you're talking, what, 18-18 for 10? Obviously, dies to board clear. But with BGHs running rampant and so much aggro, I'd rather have a bunch of 3/3s, quite honestly, in this meta. But Timepiece of Horror still sucks. I don't know. I just, honestly, I don't know if I want any of these for 10 mana. I really don't. I don't know.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? Is like, I think there's definitely a possibility. Like, if you have anything on the board that survives removal, right? Like, if you have a Death Rattle minion on the board that survives removal and you can put Lantern of Power on it, 10 extra attack and 10 extra health is like an indestructible minion. And by the time you're playing that, you've probably seen most of the removal in a typical deck. You've seen their fireballs, you've seen their silences, you've seen their BGH. This is a late game power play that says, like, I mean, Lantern of Power is just Grom, assuming you have a body on the board already. That's a lot of damage. It's a win con card that could change a lot of control matchups, but I am hard pressed to imagine a world in which you can make room for this card without giving up a way to get to the point in the game where he would become playable. That's my concern, is I don't know how you actually survive to pull that play off, because the Archthief himself is not a phenomenal play on 9.
Yeah, maybe I'm wrong. We haven't seen the 7/8s for 9 do very well. I don't know. I think, sure, you know, whatever, we can throw it in Control Warrior, I guess. Or like a control priest and hopefully make it work, but usually they're not throwing down and keeping minions on the board, especially at that point in the game. I don't know. I think it's risky. I think it's a risky minion. High risk, high reward. Like, it seriously reminds me of inner fire priests, you know, where you're trying to just ramp up that one minion and try to get it bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. If that ever becomes viable, I think this card would be great. But as we've seen, it's not that viable. And so, meh. I don't know. And I think
if the meta slowed down a ton, like if the meta got way slower, then maybe. But right now, we've just come off of a week where Aggro Shaman is apparently the top deck in the game, and everybody's frantically racing to play Murloc decks. That is not the time to be messing around with 9 discover 10 control cards. That's reality right now.
Yeah. Anything else we need to chat about for these card reviews, or do we hit them all?
I mean, I guess it's worth mentioning. That's it. That's the end of League of Explorers. As the sets go, I've heard from people who play the game a fair bit, but maybe not at a super high level, that this is one of the sets they had the most fun with. It was cool to see neat, like, deep meta shifts in the like non-pro levels of play, right? Like, guys at rank 15 were like, holy shit, everything's different this week because Reno Jackson. And that's great. I love it. I'm really excited that they took some big risks and did some cool new stuff in this set. On the whole, even though it's maybe not the most powerful set, and if somebody comes to me and they say, I'm just starting to play Hearthstone, I say, go buy Naxx. But it's fun. It's a fun set. The adventure was fun. The cards are fun. I dig this probably as like thematically as the best set they've done yet.
Absolutely. I totally agree. You're right. At least for right now, the power ranking of Naxx is still so good. But we are seeing some really cool things come out of these. And almost for every class got something to take away. And in a like a class card type aspect too, which is really neat. And not something that has always, you know, really been the truth for adventures and expansions in the past. There have definitely been winning classes and loser classes. I'd say Druid, if I'm thinking right, is probably the loser class. again, but they're still strong, so I guess that's fine. But yeah, I don't know. It's going to be a great, great month of December to play Hearthstone. Lots of variety on the ladder. You've got a lot of decisions and choices to make. You can finally choose now what you want in your 2-slot and 3-slot as a hunter, because there are so many choices finally. And that's a good thing to have. So the game is getting healthier, and a lot of it has to do with this expansion. So I think we can definitely at least be thankful for that. And I think Discover has been incredible. At first, actually, I didn't like Discover because I'm an idiot. And I don't know. I didn't fully understand it. Once the 420 or the 400% increase in likelihood for class cards came up, I was all on board. But before that, I was kind of like, that seems so RNG laden, but it's definitely been great. Jeweled Scarab, one of my favorite cards right now. And so there's just a lot of good stuff. So GG, well done, Hearthstone team, Team 5. I think it's been great.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm super excited because unless something crazy happens, we're now pretty confident that we get like a 3 or 4 month window of a stable meta again, which is probably the longest stable meta we'll have for a while. But assuming they keep up with tradition, Blizzard will be putting out a full card expansion, likely coming up here in the spring, right? Like the April-ish, April-May timeframe around PAX East again. And that's going to be great because we're going to get one more big dump of cards, hopefully going into the second and third championship seasons and into BlizzCon for next year with a whole bunch of new stuff. Now that they've learned a ton of lessons from Inspire not being very good, Discover being very good, all of the cool stuff that they've been able to pull off. Like the next set is probably going to be the most significant one yet because there's so many lessons learned that can all come together in one new card set. I'm really stoked.
Totally. Yeah. Well, man, should we take one of these emails, Kev? You think we got time for an email?
We got time for one. Yeah.
I think we got time for one. Let's go ahead.
But there's so many good ones. How do you choose? Let's do them fast. We'll do them fast.
All right. We're going to do them fast.
We'll do them fast.
All right. Here we go.
We've got mail.
All right. We got 3 emails and a whole bunch more. Thank you for sending me revised versions of the emails you've sent me in the past in short versions. They've been great. You guys did awesome with that. If you guys want to have your email read on the show, send us an email to wellmet@blizzbro.com. We love to read your emails on the show. So let's go ahead and chat through these. First one's from Ben Berger. He says, "Hey guys, after listening to your explanation of the new structure for the Hearthstone World Championships, which was very helpful, by the way, I was wondering how you thought the new structure impacted the ability for no-names/non-pros to rise up. I know that they have done away with the kind of buys for invited players. However, it seems to me that reducing the overall impact of the result of ranked play and accumulating points is more of a hit to people for whom Hearthstone is a hobby. Is this ultimately more punishing for the everyman than forcing tournaments to be equal playing fields as a benefit? Thanks for the continued excellent pod, Ben B." What do you think, Kev?
I think it's actually a little bit of both. I mean, I think the ranked play changes actually keep the point distribution pretty similar to how they have been in the past. So it's not a huge shift. You still have to be a tournament player, I think, fundamentally, to get anywhere with any kind of depth in the championship seasons that they're running this year. The way the format works, you're going to need to be at the top of those point earning brackets, which means playing tournaments. The tournament changes where nobody gets a free pass are awesome because it means that if you get to a tournament, whether that involves physically driving to it or qualifying for it or whatever else, you've got as good a shot as anybody, assuming that you're good at the game. So I dig that. On the whole, I think it's actually pretty balanced. I wouldn't want to see them make any drastic changes to what they have right now, at least as far as those individual like point allocations are concerned. The overall structure of who gets to go to the World Championships, there might be some room for improvement in the future, but I dig this.
Kevin, I hate it when we agree.
I'm sorry.
I love it. You're Canadian. You have to apologize for
instantaneously
having someone agree with you. I mean, I think it's the same thing. I think in the end, too, something that we saw is that there might be really great Hearthstone players on ladder, But at the end of the day, the Hearthstone World Championship is a tournament format. And if those players aren't playing tournament formats, they're not winning anyway. And we saw that, right? Ostkaka, Firebat are both, you know, very well known. Look at the top eight from BlizzCon, and most of them are tournament guys. There's a couple of people. I'm trying to think of NA, Strelzik and Amnesiac. Like, those are two guys that I can think of who are truly ladder warriors, who didn't really play any tournaments and got there just on their, you know, their kind of ladder merits. And it didn't end up working out once they got to the tournament part of the thing. So I think there has to be a combination of both. And I think the new format lets there be a combination of being good on ladder, having good tournament finishes to be the best in the world. Because just like the best in the world shouldn't be someone who just is winning tournaments, the best player in the world also shouldn't be the one who's just doing really well on ladder.
Yeah, I mean, bottom line, the reason that we were upset about the way the old format worked was because you could just get to like the qualifying tournaments or the regionals without ever having played well in a tournament because they didn't matter. It was all 100% about your ladder finishes, realistically, because very few tournaments actually fed the system. The new system is much better. Nobody that you aren't familiar with will ever get to play in a championship or at BlizzCon.
Email number two from Kevin Ellis, a.k.a. Multizord. Well met. I've got a catch-up mechanic for new players that I think would really work. When the next expansion comes out, Blizzard should release what I call artifact cards. They are grayed-out versions of classic sets that can be crafted for half the normal dust and also yield half the dust when disenchanted. Kind of the opposite of golden cards. This catches new players up and helps the rest of us fill out our collections too. Thoughts? Kevin. Kevin, go.
I don't dig it. I really don't. I mean, the game has lots of really good systems that they've built up for card acquisition, whether that's tavern brawls, better quests. I think there's lots of room for quests to get better still, or for more stuff like the spectator quest. I feel like, honestly, rather than the spectator quest being a random quest you could roll into, it should just be the same as the tavern brawls, and you should get that every week to go and watch your friend play, and there should be a way to track that that's separate from your quest log. I could see them doing something like a long-term cost reduction on adventures. I could see them even going the route of maybe reducing the crafting cost of core cards. They could say that they're going to reduce the crafting cost of common cards from the classic set, and they'll still disenchant for full value or whatever. I don't know. There's got to be a way that they could make this work. But in general, like, I guess that wouldn't work because that would be an infinite loop. But yeah, I don't know that this is a solution. There's definitely got to be one, but they're probably not at the point where they need to stress about it just yet. Not with all the other stuff. Like, Tavern Brawl solved 98% of the problems that we had with catch-up mechanics and the game being fun for new players.
All I would say is, Kevin, I think this is a really original way to look at it and solve the problem. I definitely haven't seen this before, so, like, kudos, because I think that's a really creative way. I think totally. Blizzard needs a more elegant way to do it. Something besides, hey, everything that you've been building to collect now is actually basically worthless, you know, kind of, or worth really half as much, and you could have been spending your dust on half as much stuff. And I don't know, I just don't think that feels great. I think Blizzard in other games has a history of gating content in the beginning and then ungating it later on as it becomes older, and I think that's going to be the solution. I think they're just going to end up bulking knacks into, you know, classic, or bolting you know, some of those older stuff all together, or maybe you'll be able to buy the first three expansions for $20 or whatever, and something like that to catch up, I think, is a much more elegant solution. But I really dig the originality of this one.
Yeah, bottom line, I don't see them mucking with card dust cost. They're way more likely to put something on sale for money because, yeah, absolutely. If Hearthstone threw a sale tomorrow that said classic packs are 50% off, Nax is 50% off,
goodbye paycheck.
Right? Like, I would be calling all my friends who have been like, yeah, I'm thinking about playing Hearthstone. I'd be like, now. Play now. Play right now.
Absolutely.
Here's $100. Play now.
Totally. Cool. Let's go to the last one. Last one's from Lance Kimberlin. Great friend of the show. Super cool guy. He says, hello, well-met crew. Just a question on what decks you might add Sir Finley Murgleton to. I know you lightly discussed it last week, but now he's in the game to play. I've seen it in Shaman once or twice so far, and a bad Murloc Paladin. Do you feel the arena has gotten any better for Warrior? Lance, what do you think, Kev?
Because
you love Finley so much.
Not a huge Finley proponent, but there are definitely probably use cases for him. Having now played a bunch of Tempo Rogue, I would love to be able to get rid of that stupid knife and replace it with something useful. Because that's totally a situation where having like the Warlock hero power or the Priest hero power or something would just be way like infinitely better. I think he's going to play in minion driven decks is my guess, because right now, like, you couldn't use him in Warrior because you need the hero power you have. You couldn't use him in Priest because you need the hero power you have. He's maybe a good addition to decks where basically any deck where you can't play Justicar Trueheart. I think there's a case to be made for Finley, because if you can play Justicar to get more value out of your existing hero power and its synergies, you're going to do that. But if you, for example, want to get rid of the Warlock hero power late in the game, that's a great time to play Finley. Arguably, there's better ways to do it, like Sideshow Spell Eater, but I definitely see him as a playable alternative, and especially cheap, right? A cheap way, even just to reset your hero power. Like, if you're running a deck that has any kind of Inspire effect, Totem Shaman or anything like that, this would be great. Just reset your hero power for one mana. Yeah, that's huge.
Yep, nailed it. That's what I would do. Kev, we gotta get out of here, Kev. We gotta get out of here. It's been way too long for two guys to be talking.
Way too long for two guys to be talking. This is like being on, you remember being on the phone? Remember back when people actually made phone calls to people?
I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with the term. Phone?
Yeah, well, okay. Back before you were born, a bunch of us used to actually pick up. Yeah. Okay. Let's get out of here.
All right. So thank you guys so much for hanging out for episode number 38. It was a blast. Kevin, always a joy to argue with you for about an hour and 15 minutes. And JR, we miss you. But yeah, let's go ahead and finish up the evening here. I think we've got some new Patreon news, don't we, Kev?
We totally do. We, as always, are super thankful for the support that all of our friends, family, and fans have shown us over the course of the last now over almost a year, actually. We're coming up on a year. We're going to be celebrating our one-year anniversary shortly after Christmas, which is crazy. Truly crazy. So for those of you who have been supporting us all along, thank you. To those of you who have not, if you're interested, the show is always going to be free, but we do accept donation-based support over at patreon.com/wellmetpodcast. You can subscribe to keep the show going, help us afford new voice actors, new features, put together cool stuff for you guys. We're coming up close now to our $350 benchmark, where we're going to bring in voice actors to do new intro, outro, and host introductions, because we haven't had those on the show in a very long time now. So big thank you this week to Punk Rockin' 4220, who is one of our new patrons, and we tremendously appreciate that, dude. Thank you so much.
We love you. New iTunes reviews. If you like the show, want to leave us a review, head over to iTunes and drop one. This week we got one from Albert Soy. Albert's a good friend of the show, so he's always the best. We love you too, Albert. Just a lot of love this week. Kev, what are you up to this week?
I am working like a crazy person. I have a ton of sort of year-end stuff, year-end esports, year-end Hearthstone, all these kind of things that I got to get put together, because my job is basically going to come to a screeching halt here in about a week and a half as everybody disappears for the holidays. So I got to crush out some content this week. Very excited to be publishing an interview with the former esports manager at Team Razer coming up here in the next week or so. It's the first interview he's ever done, exclusive, about his brand new esports startup out in Singapore as a brand management consultancy agency for esports teams, which is going to be a very, very cool interview. So if you're into esports in any way, follow me on Twitter at Lack of Realism. I'll tweet it like crazy as soon as it's done. I'm hoping it'll be online for you guys in about a week.
Awesome. All right. Well, as for me, slow and steady wins the race. I passed all my classes and did all my stuff, and so I'm just going into hardcore gamer mode and just playing a lot of video games. Working on my own stuff. I'm actually working on some spreadsheets for some pro Hearthstone teams, for which I cannot name, but working on that, and it's been really cool to work with those guys and get their insights on Hearthstone and all that kind of stuff. So that's been great. Yeah, pretty cool. Star Wars in 2 weeks. I'm really excited about it. We're canceling the payload for it. So that's how excited we are about Star Wars here. So that's going to be great. So, yeah. Well, guys, thank you again so much for joining us for episode number 38. A big thank you to Jake Buttono over at jakebuttono.ca. He does all of our audio work and he does awesome stuff. If you're looking for somebody to do some original music for you, or you just want to check out some awesome, nerdy, cool, amazing stuff, go check out his website. He's amazing. Also, big thanks to Dread Scythe of Scythe Designs. He's done some awesome work, of course, on our vectors and logos and things like that. And he actually just finished up some work for me for my stream, and it looks awesome. I got a lot of compliments on it already. Send us your emails to wellmet@blizzpro.com. Check out our subreddit at reddit.com/r/wellmetpodcast. We're over at patreon.com/wellmetpodcast and @wellmetpodcast on Twitter. Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, everything else. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
You can find John on Twitter @KickedTripod and on Twitch @twitch.tv/KickedTripod. You can find JR on Twitter @Eldorian and on Twitch @twitch.tv/BlizzPro. And you can find Kevin on Twitter @LackOfRealism and on Twitch @twitch.tv/OdinTV. BlizzPro.com. Beyond Noob.